Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are back in the book of Japanese folklore, written down by Yae Teodora Ozaki. This story has to do with compasses, magic, and the fog of war. Okay, let's begin. The Shinansa, or South Pointing Carriage. The compass, with its needle, always pointing north, is quite a common thing, and no one thinks now that it is remarkable, though when it was first invented, it must have been a wonder. Now, long ago in China, there was a still more wonderful invention called the Shinansha. This was a kind of chariot with the figure of a man on it always pointing to the south. No matter how the chariot was placed, the figure always wheeled about and pointed to the south. This curious instrument was invented by Kotai, one of the three Chinese emperors of the mythological age. Kotai was the son of the emperor Yuhai. Before he was born, his mother had a vision which foretold that her son would be a great man. One summer evening, she went out on a walk in the meadows to seek the cool breezes which blow at the end of the day, and to gaze with pleasure at the starlit heavens above her. As she looked at the North Star, strange to relate, it shot forth vivid flashes of lightning in every direction. Soon after this, her son Kotai came into the world. Kotai, in time, grew to manhood, and succeeded his father, the Emperor Yuhai. His early reign was greatly troubled by the rebel Shiyu. This rebel wanted to make himself king, and many were the battles which he fought to this end. Shiyu was a wicked magician. His head was made of iron, and there was no man that could conquer him. At last Kotai declared war against the rebel, and led his army to battle, and the two armies met on the plain called Tokuroku. The emperor boldly attacked the enemy, but the magician brought down a dense fog upon the battlefield, and while the royal army were wandering around in confusion, trying to find their way, Shiyu retreated with his troops, laughing at having fooled the royal army. No matter how strong and brave the emperor's soldiers were, the rebel with his magic could always escape in the end. Kotai returned to his palace and thought and pondered deeply as to how he should conquer the magician, for he was determined not to give up yet. After a long time, he invented the Shinansha, with the figure of a man always pointing south, for there were no compasses in those days. With this instrument to show him the way, he needed not to fear the dense fog raised up by the magician to confound his men. Kotai again declared war on Shiyu. He placed the Shinansha in front of his army and led the way to the battlefield. The battle began in earnest. The rebel was being driven backward by the royal troops when he again resorted to magic, and upon him saying some strange words in a loud voice, immediately a dense fog came down upon the battlefield. But this time, no soldier minded the fog. Not one was confused. Kotai, by pointing to the Shinansha, could find his way and direct the army without a single mistake. He closely pursued the rebel army and drove them backward till they came to a big river. This river, Kotai and his men found, was swollen by the floods and impossible to cross. Shiyu, by using his magic art, quickly passed over with his army and shut himself up in the fortress on the opposite bank. When Kotai found his march checked, he was wild with disappointment, for he had very nearly overtaken the rebel when the river stopped him. He could do nothing, for there were no boats in those days, so the emperor ordered his tent to be pitched in the pleasantest spot that the place afforded. One day he stepped forth from his tent, and after walking about for a short time, he came to a pond. Here he sat down on the bank and was lost in thought. It was autumn. The trees growing along the edge of the water were shedding their leaves, which floated hither and thither on the surface of the pond. By and by, Kotai's attention was attracted to the spider on the brink of the water. The little insect was trying to get onto one of the floating leaves nearby. It did so at last, and was soon floating over the water to the other side of the pond. This little incident made the clever emperor think that he might try to make something that could carry himself and his men over the river the same way the leaf had carried over the spider. He set to work and persevered until he had invented the first boat. When he found that it was a success, he set all his men to make more, and in time there were enough boats for the whole army. Kotai now took his army across the river and attacked Shiyu's headquarters. He gained a complete victory and so put end to the war which had troubled his country for so long. This wise and good emperor did not rest until he had secured peace and prosperity throughout his whole land. He was beloved by his subjects, who now enjoyed their happiness of peace for many long years under him. He spent a great deal of time in making inventions which would benefit his people, and he succeeded in many besides the boat and the south-pointing Shinansha. He had reigned for about 100 years when one day, as Kotai was looking upwards, the sky suddenly became red, and something came glittering like gold towards the earth. As it came nearer, Kotai saw that it was a great dragon. The dragon approached and bowed its head before the emperor. The empress and the courtiers were so frightened that they ran away screaming, but the emperor only smiled and called them to stop and said, "Do not be afraid. This is a messenger from heaven. My time here is finished." He then mounted the dragon, which began to ascend towards the sky. When the empress and the courtiers all saw this, they all cried out together, "Wait a moment, we wish to come too." And they all ran and caught hold of the dragon's beard and tried to mount him, but it was impossible for so many people to ride on the dragon. Several of them hung onto the creature's beard so that when it tried to mount, the hair was pulled out and they fell to the ground. Meanwhile, the empress and a few of the courtiers were safely seated on the dragon's back. The dragon flew up so high into the heavens that in a short time, the inmates of the palace, who had been left behind disappointed, could see them no more. After some time, a bow and arrow dropped to the earth in the courtyard of the palace. They were recognized as having belonged to the Emperor Kotai. The courtiers took them up carefully and preserved them as sacred relics in the palace. The end. I think this story goes to show how much influence China had on other nations in the area. Even though it is Japanese folklore, the characters and location are all located in China. And I'm always a sucker for sitting down and being inspired by nature, so this story was good fun for me. And the podcast shoutout is to a favorite of mine, The Endless Knot. A marriage of etymology and the classics, Avon and Mark do a great job of making learning connections that just make you crave more. And the hosts are super nice on top of it all. And so if you like their show as much as I do, go and give them a like, a rating, and a review. And my shout out is to Lusaka. It is the capital and largest city of Zambia. It's also one of the fastest developing cities in southern Africa. English is the official language, but also spoken inside the city are Bemba, Tonga, Lenye, Soli, Lozi, and Nyanja. And its earliest settlers date back to the 6th century AD, but then a large part of Lenya and Soli people came in around the 17th or 18th century. And then it was part of that horrible, horrible thing called Northern Rhodesia, and it was controlled by the British South African Company, and we all know what those folks did. By being part of the British Protectorate of Northern Rhodesia, it shared territory with Zimbabwe, and so Lukasa lost some of its power and such to the city of Salisbury, which is now Harare in Zimbabwe. Now it's in the hands of the Zambian people. And of course, it looks gorgeous, and I would love to visit. Actually, Zambia and South Africa and Mozambique are all on my very, very, very much want to travel places right now. So in Lusaka, the Chua language is used a lot, and that's kind of a mixing of a few languages and then also people in the city, so it's kind of almost making a new language. And so in Chua, I say Zikomo and Tizaonana Mailo. Thank you, and see you tomorrow.